astronomer. There's already a whale constellation, so I could start there. Although I would miss writing 100-page papers about whale poop. I hope you get a chance to come see this place someday. You would totally love it. Love, Uncle Joe.
Aw, he misses you, said Abby, shoving the card back into the box. Do you think he'll go visit him? I handed her a pen and a pad of paper. Nah, my mom would never let me go. He's in this remote cabin way up on the edge of the Arctic Circle. He had to take a plane, a ferry, a train, a bus, and a pickup truck just to get out there.
Whoa, said Abby. All he's missing is a ride on a moose.
She looked up. Hey, I still have to tell you the story of the Camp Cantaloupe Moose. It's the very best story ever. Here, let me get comfortable.
Okay. Hey there, new Abby.
Abby rolled over onto her stomach and pushed her feet through the link. This place is so much better now that we've got two rooms, she said.
Love it.
Okay, so this is the story the camp director told us. Camp Cantaloupe was founded a long, long time ago, over half a century. And originally it wasn't called Camp Cantaloupe. It was called Camp Orcus after the island. One night, in the middle of its first summer, this massive storm came through, and the next morning the beaches were covered with all this wreckage and debris that washed up on shore, along with a super confused moose that people figured must have gotten blown down from Canada. Big, huge storm. Big, huge mess. The campers back then volunteered to help clean up the beaches if they could keep all the cool stuff they found. So they did, and they used it to build the most incredible treehouse. The moose kept wandering around the beaches, watching them while they worked. And I guess it got used to having company, because when they were done, it followed them back to camp and stayed there. Everyone loved the moose and tried to feed it from their lunches. But the only thing it would ever take was... ta-da! Cantaloupe! So they gave the moose all the cantaloupe they had, and it became the camp pet. And it must have loved them as much as they loved it. Because when the kids and counselors went home in the fall, the people who lived on the island said the moose got really sad and wouldn't eat anything. And that winter, it died of a broken heart. I couldn't help it. I laughed. Abby shushed me.
The next summer, all the returning kids showed up with cantaloupes, because of course they were excited to see the moose again. And when they heard the news, they couldn't believe their favorite moose in the whole world was gone. People were so sad, they talked about canceling camp. But soon, stories started going around about kids seeing the moose at night, peering through the windows of the cabins, all eyes and antlers and big, huge nostrils. Kids even left their cantaloupes outside for it, and the next morning they were always gone. Then one day, a girl got lost in the woods, and everyone was worried. But that night she turned up at camp safe and sound, and told everyone the moose found her and showed her the way back, leading her through the trees. From then on, everyone hoped they would see the friendly ghost moose, and they voted to change the name and motto and everything. And that's why the official camp call is... Cantaloupe! Cantaloupe! Moose! Moose! Moose!
I blinked at her. Seriously? A fruit-loving ghost moose that blew in on a dark and stormy night? That was the best story ever? The big mysterious legend of Camp Cantaloupe? I'd come up with better stories while brushing my teeth.
Neat, I said. That's really neat. So, did you ever see it? Not the moose, no, Abby said. But I hung out in the treehouse all the time. That's where the camp director told us first-timers the story. You would seriously love this treehouse, Max. It's all made out of driftwood and planks and window frames and things. It even has this trap door with a real old-timey lock. Although it's stuck shut, so you have to go around and over the side to get in the treehouse. But once you're there, you can see over Puget Sound to the other islands. And on clear days, you can see Canada. It was my favorite place in the entire camp, and that's saying a lot. Abby reached back with her foot and flipped Creepy Frog over her head. The director went to Camp Cantaloupe when he was our age, she continued. He said it's camp tradition to sit in the treehouse on your very first day, eat cantaloupe, and hear the story of the moose.
Hey!
Her eyes lit up.
We should have one too.
What, a weird fruit tradition? I said.
Abby whapped me with Creepy Frog.
No, a camp director.
I nominate you.
Wait, me?
Sure, said Abby. I mean, you built the first fort, and you like running things more than me.
I looked down at my hands, trying to keep my smile under control.
This was perfect. I was great at running things, and as director, I could start steering us away from summer camp games ASAP.
But I didn't want to make new Abby suspicious. How to accept power without sounding too eager?
A bass rumbling filled the fort, and I looked up. Samson had arrived from Fort Comfy, strolling up and over Abby's back with a square of toilet paper stuck to his paw.
How, honestly, Samson?
Abby twisted and grabbed him. What now? Toilet paper? Where did you get that? You're like the garbage collector in chief.
Ooh, perfect, I said, spotting my chance.
Why don't we make Samson our director instead?
Samson?
Yeah, he's around all the time, and he's definitely a fan of the forts.
Ha! Cute idea, said Abby.
All in favor?
We raised our hands.
Motion passed.
Congratulations, Samson.
She shook Samson's tail.
I guess we still need someone to manage meetings and stuff, though, I said casually. Maybe a vice director or something.
Well, that's you then, said Abby.
You're sure? Don't smile, Maggie.
Obviously. All in favor of Maggie being vice director of Camp Pillow Fort? She stuck a hand in the air and raised Samson's tail with the other. Awesome. Motion also passed.
Where do you...
Hey, no, Mr. Director! Leave it!
Samson was batting happily at the patchwork scarf hanging above the entrance. Abby seized him, barricading him in her arms, and he settled down, purring like a lawnmower.
All right, I said, brandishing my pen.
Excellent. It was my turn now. If that's all the moose storytelling and leader-electing business out of the way, let's get started on this game... camp thing.
Hooray,
said Abby.
What should we do first?
I gave her a look. Are you serious? Don't do this to me, new Abby.
You know the answer to that.
Abby smiled and rubbed Samson's head with her chin.
All good games start with a map, she said, quoting my long-standing policy.
I gave a sigh of relief.
We divided up the work.
Abby did the actual drawing, since she had the art and graphic design superpowers, while I surveyed the forts and picked out colored pencils. Abby did a beautiful job. She put our forts side by side, right in the center of the map, making sure to draw in the correct number of pillows, and outlined the whole thing in a border of sheets and blankets. In the blank spaces at the edges, she wrote, "Here there be margins," which she said was an inside joke from camp. I decided not to ask what that was about. All good maps are supposed to be jagged at the edges, technically speaking. But the crimping scissors I stole from my mom were missing, so we had to settle for artistically ripping the paper instead. Abby added a picture of Creepy Frog in one corner for scale, and another of Samson with his tail pointing north for a compass, and our map was complete.
Dude, said Abby, running a finger over Fort Comfy.
Look at how many unlinked pillows we have.
What if they all went somewhere? There could be another fort here, and here, and here. We could go so many cool places.
Cool places? She had me just a pillow fort away. Wasn't that enough?
What sort of cool places? Anywhere. Come on, use your famous imagination, Mags.
She counted off on her fingers.
We could have links to the pool, the museum, the library, the teacher's lounge at school next year. Both ice cream shops, the roller derby rink, that one amazing costume shop, the aquarium. I gaped at her. That was brilliant.
Although my highly trained brain already saw a problem.
Okay, I said.
But wouldn't we have to somehow get to all those places and build pillow forts in them first?
What do you mean?
Well, our forts only connect to each other, not to other rooms in our houses, right? So there probably always needs to be a fort on the other end to connect to, And I seriously doubt there's already a pillow fort hidden in the aquarium waiting for us.
Shoot, said Abby.
Fair point. Well, I hope we figure it out and find a way to add more forts and people soon.
What? Samson and I aren't good enough for you anymore? I asked, only half joking.
Abby suddenly became very interested in smoothing out a corner of the map.
Of course you are. It's just that, you know, two people and a cat isn't much of a camp, is it? If we had more campers, we could really do it right. And that would mean we'd have more cabins, too.
She tapped the paper. I mean, how cool would it be if somebody else did have a fort somewhere? Like some kid nearby. What if we were linked in already and we just didn't know it yet?
She looked around hopefully at the pillows lining the walls.
That would be awesome, I said. Except obviously it wouldn't. I'd only just gotten Abby back. I wasn't about to start sharing her with someone new.
But it's pretty much impossible.
Yeah, I guess. Abby sighed. She cuddled Samson closer. They'd probably need some sort of connection with us, not just a fort of their own. And I've been gone all summer, so that's no good. And you haven't really been in touch with anybody at all, right?
I nodded. She didn't have to say it like that, but it was true.
Only my mom, I said. And, ugh, tennis lessons. I never did learn those kids' names. And Caitlin for like a second. And you. But no one else except, hey, maybe.
5. Abby beat me to the punch. Your uncle, she cried, pointing dramatically at the postcard box. Your Uncle Jim, Mags.
Uncle Joe.
Your Uncle Joe, Mags. He's been sending you postcards, right? And you've been writing back from inside your fort?
Well, yeah, I said. Only I really don't think...
But Samson was upended with a yowl as Abby jumped up and started pulling pillows aside. Hey, hang on, I said. What if she brought the whole place down? What if she collapsed the link? What if the collapsing link sucked us down with it into some blankety underworld?
Uncle Joe probably doesn't even have a...
Bingo, cried Abby, clenching a wall pillow in one hand, pointing dramatically with the other at a completely out-of-place gray cushion filling the gap. I goggled.
But this doesn't make sense, I said. Why would Uncle Joe have a pillow fort?
Why not? Said Abby, a massive smile on her face. Maybe you gave him the idea in one of your postcards, and he thought it sounded fun, and whatever's making them all connect is affecting his now. She held out a hand to the strange gray cushion. So, after you.
I shook my head. This was happening way too fast.
Hold on, I said.
Just wait a second.
There's no proof that link goes to Uncle Joe's fort. None. What if it goes to a haunted platinum mine instead? Or a space station that had a massive hull breach and there's no more oxygen. Or an underwater trench full of razorbacked assassin crabs. What if I go through that pillow and never come back?
Abby raised her eyebrows.
Seriously? Earth to Maggie. This isn't one of your games. This is real life. And it must be your uncle through there, because who else could it be?
And since he's your relative, I thought it would be polite if you went first. But if you're scared...
She turned to the gray cushion.
No, it's okay, I said. I get it. I'm vice director. I should go first.
Abby lowered her eyebrows and sat back. I took a deep, slow breath, preparing for the worst, and crawled forward into the mysterious fort. And immediately almost threw up, because I was facing the wrong way. From my perspective, I just pushed forward into a gray cushion standing on its side. But it turned out that from the perspective of the new fort, I was actually under the cushion, meaning my entire world gave a quarter turn up and back in the space of about 2 seconds.
It was not my favorite sensation.
How no? I said, clutching at the pillow. What is it? Asked Abby behind, or no, beneath me. Is it a spaceship full of oxygen crabs? Are you dead?
I ignored her and tried to get my bearings. I wasn't in a spaceship. Or in an underwater trench, But I wasn't in a pillow fort either.
I was on a sofa, under a musty-smelling blanket that seemed to be just lying there, normal style.
Light was seeping through around the edges, but no sounds were coming from the room or spaceport or whatever was outside to give me any clues. It was just me and the sofa and the blanket and silence. It was strange. Very strange. Without a pillow fort, how had I linked to wherever I was? I left my legs dangling back in Seattle in case I needed to make a speedy getaway and felt around carefully in the gloom. My hand hit something. A small, stiff piece of paper.
I think I found a clue!
I called back, or down, heaving myself all the way up through the link. I sat beside the gap, squinting at the paper in the dim light, and my stomach gave a happy lurch as I recognized the last postcard I'd sent Uncle Joe.
Hey! You were right! I called.
I tucked the card back between the pillows, slipped out from under the blanket, and emerged into what was absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, my uncle's cabin.
Okay. This was awesome!
The cabin was small, just two rooms. The one I was in held the sofa, a desk covered with notebooks and electronic equipment, and a twin bed. The other had a basic kitchen set up with mini appliances, two folding chairs, and a tiny table. The place smelled old and musty and might have been completely boring, except for the whales plastered over absolutely everything. Poster-sized glossy photos covered the walls. Whales diving, whales swimming, whales leaping, whales slapping the water with their fins. There were smaller photos tacked up between them, filling every corner, and even more piled on the table and spilling onto the floor. Most of them had official-looking numbers across the bottom, so they were probably important scientific documents. But Uncle Joe had them pinned up on every surface like a teenager obsessing over a favorite band. I felt a rush of affection for my dorky uncle. If I had to share Abby and our linked-up forts with someone, he was the only acceptable choice.
Well, I almost puked, said Abby, clambering out of the sofa. We could totally charge kids good money for that ride.
How weird that your fort just linked to a regular sofa, though. I looked back at the sofa. It definitely was weird. How on earth did a cushion with a blanket over it count as a fort? And what was making it all work?
We had to figure it out soon. We'd been lucky to end up somewhere safe. But if the rules were this loose, well, things could go wrong. Very, very quickly. Abby whapped me on the arm. Dude, stop staring at that sofa like it's possessed, she said. We can figure it out later. Come on, we're in Alaska!
She ran around exploring every corner of the cabin, discovering a closet full of cold weather gear and a door to a tiny bathroom papered with more photos.
I guess your uncle's not that into whales, huh? She said.
I wonder where he is, anyway. Out researching, I guess. We went to the window over the desk.
Whoa, that view, said Abby. I would love to work up here.
It was a bright, clear day. The window in the main room showed rocky Arctic tundra turning into craggy hills, then snow-covered mountains in the distance. We ran to look out the window over the kitchen sink and saw more of the same, plus a rusty red pickup truck and a shed that looked like it might hold a generator. But it was the window in the front of the cabin that had the real view. A beach of black rock and silver-blue ice curling around a dark, gleaming, wave-flecked bay.
It's just like the pictures on his postcards, I said, drinking in the light and the water and the great big sky.
My heart began pumping hard. For the first time all summer, I was free. No more filling in time. No more bumming around my house and yard waiting for Abby to get back and my summer to start. I was stepping out into the wide world. I could already see myself striding across this beach, my head held high, seagulls flocking to my call, and the sun shining down as I went to meet my destiny with the wind blowing through my hair.
"Look, there he is," said Abby, pointing to a motorboat bobbing out in the bay. She pulled open the front door, and we ran down the steps. Shouted in shock, and ran right back in.
Man, it's freezing in Alaska, Abby said. We raided the closet, bundling up in coats and hats and sweaters at least three sizes too big, and headed outdoors again. The air was fresh beyond belief, and smelled like seaweed and stone and cold salt water. We clattered down the rocks to the shore and jumped up and down, waving our arms and yelling. The figure in the boat didn't look up. "I think he's wearing headphones or something," I said, holding a hand over my eyes. "And he's not looking this way. How are we supposed to let him know we're here?"
"On it," said Abby.
She grabbed a baseball-sized chunk of ice in each hand and flung them as far out into the bay as she could, which, seeing as it was Abby, was pretty far. There were two big splashes. The figure in the boat lifted its head. If I hadn't already known it was Uncle Joe, the yell that echoed across the water would have told me for sure.
"Holy whale poop!"
Uncle Joe tugged the motor to life and turned his boat toward shore. We waited, hopping around to keep warm. "Hang on. Wait a second," Abby said suddenly. "What exactly are we doing here?" "What do you mean?" "I mean, what are we going to say when he gets here? Are we telling him everything? Are we letting him in on our discovery?"
"Oh, right," I said.
"I'm not sure we should. What if he goes all grown up on us and tries to take control of the forts?" I shook my head.
"He wouldn't do that. He's not that kind of guy."
"Good. I guess we should probably just tell him then. He'll want to know how we got up here, and it's not like we have a cover story." We turned back to the water just as Uncle Joe pulled the boat up onto the rocks. I expected him to be surprised, maybe even shocked. But as we ran to meet him, he shouted something I never thought I would hear come out of his mouth.
"Not one word, either of you. Not one single beluga-bawling word about it."
"Hi, you..."
"Huh?" I said.
"Not one word about what?"
"Anything,"
said Uncle Joe, putting his hands on his hips.
"I don't want to know a whale-burping thing about anything at all."
Abby looked at me in alarm. "But," I said, "aren't you wondering how we got up?"
"La, la, la,"
cried Uncle Joe, shoving his fingers in his ears. It took both of us putting our hands over our mouths to get him to stop la-lying and explain himself.
"Okay,"
he said, eyeing us carefully.
"Maggie and Abby, I'm guessing?"
Abby nodded.
"Good, that's good. Nice to meet you. I'm Joe. Now, are you too clear on why I don't want you to say anything just yet?"
We shook our heads. Uncle Joe ran a hand over his face. "All right. Maggie,
you know from my postcards that I've been up here all on my own for 3 months. And apart from a few day trips into town for supplies, I've spent most of that time sitting by myself, in a boat, watching the clouds, and listening to the underwater microphones.
Take a moment to imagine that for me." He spread his arms wide, and Abby and I looked around at the sky and rocks and waves.
"And now imagine that two young people, who you know should definitely be back in Seattle, have suddenly appeared in front of you here beside your remote Alaskan bay. What would you think?"
We looked at each other.
"You'd think you were hallucinating, that's what,"
Uncle Joe answered for us.
"You'd think you were hallucinating and actually having a conversation with a flock of seagulls or a pile of rocks or something. And that's just not a good use of time. So you would hope, against all your scientific training, that you weren't hallucinating and these young people actually were there, which would mean some kind of magic was involved."
"Actually, we're not calling it magic," I cut in, "because..."
"Which means," said Uncle Joe, shouting over me, "that I don't want to hear a single word about it."
Our shock must have shown on our faces, because he spoke more gently as he went on.
"Listen, kids. Maggie, Abby, I may be a grown-up now, but I've read a ton of books in my time, and I know how these things go. The moment the kids in stories tell the grown-ups about the magic they've discovered is always the moment things start to go seriously wrong. I'm guessing you've probably done some very hard work and been brave and smart, and you want to tell me all about it. But the only way I'm willing to let you stay here
is if you agree to act like you being here is completely and totally normal. Can you do that for me?
There was a huge, windy silence. I had no idea what to say, but Abby tugged her fancy new braid out from under her hat, put her hands on her hips, and smiled.
So, Joe, she said, what are we having for lunch?
6. After a lunch of canned soup and crackers, which was pretty much all Uncle Joe had for food, came everything you ever wanted to know about whales, an Uncle Joe afternoon lecture. I listened from the folding table while Abby followed Uncle Joe around the cabin, hanging on to his every word as he gushed about the pictures covering the walls.
Oh, and this one here, said Uncle Joe, tapping a photo next to the fridge. Is Bertha. She's a fighter. See that massive lateral scar on her tail? She probably got that in a fight with an orca when she was young. And this photo shows a bubble net, a sort of ring of bubbles humpbacks make underwater to confuse fish and trap them in a small space so they can eat them. Whales also slap the surface of the water to send down sound waves to freak the fish out. You really should see a whale calf try to slap the water sometime. It's the cutest thing in the whole world.
I smiled. I felt good. I was on an adventure. I was warm and full, and it looked like the combination of cold Alaskan air and my dorky sweet uncle had finally driven Camp Cantaloupe clear out of Abby's mind. At this rate, I'd be able to steer us back to our regularly scheduled programming in no time. Abby came over to the table and sat down across from me. I just realized something funny, she whispered. Uncle Joe was still chatting away. What? You and your uncle have been like your own tiny club of zany people living by themselves in cabins all summer. Isn't that hilarious?
Ugh.
So much for hanging on Uncle Joe's every word. First off, I whispered back, you are exactly as zany as me, Miss I Made My Best Friend a Scarf in the Middle of July. Hey, you made one too. Second, my fort wasn't a cabin. I pulled out my extra strength air quotes. Until you came home and decided to turn it into one. Okay, fair. But you totally agreed to it. And third, where have you been living all summer? Oh, that's right. A cabin. Well, yeah, Abby said. That's my point. You're supposed to live in a cabin at camp. It's kind of weird when you're on your own.
And this big guy, said Uncle Joe, waving at a column of glossy pictures beside the front door, is our grand finale. His name is Orpheus. He's the whole reason I'm out here.
Abby looked up, her braid swinging.
Orpheus? That guy from the old Greek legends?
I stared at her. She shrugged. One of the counselors at camp read us some of the stories.
That's wonderful, Uncle Joe said. Do you know the story, Maggie?
Nope. I was all on my own again.
Orpheus was a singer, explained Uncle Joe. An amazing singer, the best. He was so good, he almost managed to sing the love of his life back from the dead. And I think Orpheus the whale is doing something just as incredible.
You think he's singing dead whales back to life? Asked Abby.
Ha! No, nothing like that. But I think he's what I call a rogue singer.
And what's a rogue singer? I asked, figuring I might as well keep being the one who didn't know anything. Uncle Joe plonked down on the back of the sofa.
Well, with humpbacks, it's the adult males who do the singing, and they usually sing more or less the same song that changes slowly over time. We've got lots of recordings of different whales singing over the years, and we think we basically understand what most songs are all about. But based on some clues I've come across in my research, I think that during summer feeding time, which is right now, one or two very rare whales leave the group to sing a 100% different song all by themselves. Orpheus definitely keeps wandering off on his own,
and I want to be the first scientist to get a recording of this other song. If there is one. I'm basically the only whale researcher on the planet who believes any of this, though. All my colleagues think I'm totally weird, but I can live with that.
You might not have much choice, I said, gesturing around at the walls.
Uncle Joe threw a pillow at me.
Stop! Abby and I shouted, leaping to our feet. Uncle Joe was sitting right beside the blanket and pillow that made up the link. If he moved one more pillow, or even leaned the wrong way, he would see the gap. Or worse, fall straight through, destroying the link and leaving us stranded up here for good. Uncle Joe froze like a fish in a bubble net.
What do we do?
I hissed at Abby, forgetting I was annoyed. This was a crisis.
We've got to build something more secure, Abby whispered back.
I nodded.
So, hey, Uncle Joe, I said in my best casual voice. I'm not saying anything in particular here, but this might be a good time for you to go be, you know, somewhere else for a while.
Uncle Joe's eyebrows went up, then down, then back up again.
Okay. How about you go for a walk on the beach? Suggested Abby. You can look for wildlife or something. Maybe you'll see a moose.
She nudged my leg under the table.
Ugh, she was thinking of that ghost moose again. What, did she expect to see it prancing around Uncle Joe's cabin up here on the edge of the Arctic Circle? We were already having a bigger adventure than anything Camp Cantaloupe could possibly offer.
Why couldn't she just let it go already?
All right, I'll do that, said Uncle Joe. But sorry, Abby, there aren't any moose up here this time of year.
How long should my wildlife walk be?
15 minutes should do it, I said.
I'll just change my sweater.
The moment Uncle Joe trooped out into the cold Alaskan afternoon, Abby and I leaped into action, tearing apart the sofa to build a proper fort around the link, with a door and blanket roof and everything. It wasn't the most beautiful pillow fort the world had ever seen, but it would have to do.
Uncle Joe gave the fort a long look when he came back in.
I'm doing my best not to think about what any of this means, kids, he said with a sigh, rubbing the back of his neck.
But it's not easy. I'm guessing there are all sorts of rules I'm not supposed to break, or things I'm not supposed to do, right? No, don't answer that. You'll probably say too much.
He chewed his lip.
Okay, here's the deal. I won't mess with this fort so long as you two promise to announce your presence whenever you, swing by.
Like, knock on the floor or something? I said.
That'll work, said Uncle Joe. But make sure to knock loudly, just in case I'm in the bath.
Abby raised her hand.
Is it saying too much if I mention you should think up a name for your fort?
Uncle Joe flinched.
Well, it's too late now if it is.
He eyed the heap of pillows and blankets, then smiled.
At least that's easy.
He went over to the desk, scribbled something on a piece of paper, and held it up.
Fort Orpheus, read Abby. I like it.
It's perfect, I said. Uncle Joe beamed. The three of us hung out for the rest of the afternoon, talking about sciencey science and whales and Alaska and watching the sun shine down on the waves. Uncle Joe was telling me about the scientists who had stayed in the cabin before him and all the random gear they'd left behind, when Abby, who had run home to feed Samson, came bursting back out of the fort.
Hey, Joe, cover your ears for a minute, will you? She said.
Uncle Joe squeezed his eyes shut, put his fingers in his ears, and started humming. What's up? I asked.
We've gotta go, said Abby. My dad says dinner's almost ready.
Do we have to? I wasn't ready to leave Alaska.
Obviously, he thinks we're there anyway. And you know how he is about people being on time for meals. Besides, Tamal's eating with us tonight, remember?
Fine, I said, dragging myself out of my chair.
What are we having?
Abby shrugged.
Smelled like lasagna,
Ooh, nice.
I looked over at Uncle Joe, sitting there with his ears plugged and his eyes scrunched tight. He'd probably love some homemade lasagna after his weeks of soup and crackers and not much else. It was a shame he wasn't coming with us, really. I bopped him on the arm, and he took his fingers out of his ears.
We're going in the fort now, I said. There's a chance we'll be making lasagna. Do you want some if we end up having extra?
Uncle Joe struggled with himself for a moment, then nodded.
Thanks, Maggie. That's thoughtful of you. I am getting pretty sick of soup. Though what I really miss up here is fresh, green things. You wouldn't believe how much you can crave fruits and vegetables until you can't get them.
I don't know about those, said Abby. But we can definitely bring you lasagna. We'll set it outside the fort, so you don't have to bother trying to fit in there with us, I finished. Uncle Joe smiled.
Perfect, he said. I'm glad you two kindred spirits are back together. You make a great team.
Abby threw an arm around my shoulder, catching me by surprise.
Oh, we're better than great, Joe, she said, squeezing. We're the beluga-balling best.
My heart went all splashy. You could have knocked me over with a bubble net.
5 minutes later, Abby and I and our freshly washed hands were sitting down to big plates of lasagna and green beans with Alex, the twins, and Tamal, who turned out to be short, muscly, and adorably shy.
So, what kind of trouble did you two end up getting into today?
Asked Alex, passing me a dish and a serving spoon. Abby and I broke into identical grins.
That good, huh? Laughed Matt.
Oh, no. It was a pretty normal day, Abby said airily. You know, for us.
I kicked her foot under the table, then looked at the dish I was holding. I looked down at my plate.
Sorry, I said. What am I supposed to do with this, exactly?
Mark dropped his knife with a clatter. Alex looked shocked.
You mean you've never put guacamole on your lasagna?
You poor thing, said Matt.
Abby, said Mark, turning to his sister. You never told her? And you call yourself a friend.
That is enough out of all of you, Abby said, waving her fork.
Mags, just put it on your lasagna. It's the best thing ever, promise.
I did as she said and passed the bowl to Tamal, who leaned in.
Thank you so much for asking, he whispered. I didn't know what to do with it either.
We clinked forks in solidarity.
So it was just a normal day then?
Said Alex.
Well, I'll bet anything you two will make up for it with an epic time at Camp Pillow Fort tomorrow.
Oh, wow! I said around a mouthful of guacamole and lasagna.
See?
Said Abby and Mark together. I nodded.
That is incredible! I said when I could speak again.
What do you call it? Guacazania? Lasagnole?
Ew,
said Mark. Abby snorted.
We just call it good,
said Alex.
You really should come over for dinner more often, Maggie,
Matt said. He reached past me for the salt, his arm muscles moving under his sleeve.
You've been missing out.
My stomach lurched like I'd just gone backward through the link to Uncle Joe's. Yep, I definitely had been.
After dinner, Abby and I cleverly volunteered to wash the dishes so we could stash a secret container of leftovers in the back of the fridge, then piled into the living room with the others for back-to-back superhero movies. When everyone started yawning, Tamal said goodnight, going around the room awkwardly shaking hands.
Your pillow fort camp thing sounds fun, he said when he got to me. I hope you have some really magical adventures with it this summer.
Abby started giggling and had to bury her face in a sofa pillow.
Thank you, I said, kicking Abby under the blanket. I think we might.
We all said goodnight again. Then the twins started another movie while Alex walked Tamal to his car and Abby and I headed for bed.
Are you staying over, Maggie?
Asked Alex, poking his head around the bathroom door as Abby and I brushed our teeth.
Does lasagna taste amazing with guacamole?
I mumbled around my toothbrush.
Okay, I have absolutely no idea what you just said,
said Alex.
But it sounded like yes.
Sleep well, you two. Don't stay up too late. Abby and I waited until the coast was clear, then launched a covert pajama ops mission to retrieve the leftover lasagna from the fridge and deliver it to Fort Orpheus. It went off without a hitch, and after a quick stop on the way back to officially add Uncle Joe's fort to our map, we returned, triumphant, to Abby's bedroom.
Man, what a day, Abby said, bounding into bed.
I switched off the overhead light and settled into my spot in the entrance to Fort Comfy, the lamp glowing behind me. Another night or two, and this would become routine.
So, said Abby, crossing her arms behind her head. Matt's getting pretty strong, isn't he?
Warning! Warning! Cover blown!
Is he? I said.
I guess. I mean, why would I know?
Abby's smile definitely qualified as a smirk.
Just thought I maybe saw you looking during dinner tonight is all.
I lobbed Creepy Frog at her. She caught him one-handed and tucked him behind her pillow.
Don't worry. I won't tell.
Night, Mags. Sweet dreams.
Good night, you complete menace.
I flicked off the lamp and stretched out, smiling. Abby was right. It had been a day. I mean, Alaska. Alaska, Alaska, Alaska! That bay was seriously the most perfect place ever. A whole big playground of land and water with only one friendly grown-up in it. One friendly grown-up who specifically refused to find out what we were up to. It couldn't have been more perfect if I'd dreamed it up myself. And it changed everything. Fort McForderson, Fort Comfy, and Fort Orpheus. That was our summer now. Sleepovers at Abby's, mornings in our forts, afternoons in Alaska escaping the heat, dinner with the twins, and all the very best games ever. Abby would come around. She'd realize soon that there was no point hanging on to her camp obsession when what we had was so much better. And I hadn't even gotten started yet. I was going to plan and direct and organize and make this the greatest summer vacation in history. Just for her. I closed my eyes, completely content, and was about to drift off when a soft, distinct thump sounded from behind the pillow that led to Fort McForderson. I sat up, squinting blearily into the dark. Ugh, not this again.
Samson? I whispered. Is that you?
Silence.
Uncle Joe?
More silence.
Mom?
Nothing. Frowning, I crawled through the link, switched on the light, and got the fright of my life. There was someone in the fort with me. But it wasn't my mom. And it wasn't Uncle Joe. It wasn't even Samson. 7. It was a girl, younger than me, with a baseball cap over her wavy black hair, sitting calmly in the center of the fort with her arms crossed, looking for all the world like she owned the place.
Whoa, I said.
What? Hi?
Maggie Hetzker, said the girl.
It wasn't a question.
Yes?
I'd never seen this girl before in my life. How did she know my name? And how long had she been here in my very own personal pillow fort? And hey, where had she even come from? I started with the obvious question.
Who are you?
My name is Carolina, said the girl.
She pronounced it the long way. Carolina.
I'm here to escort you to a meeting.
A meeting?
A meeting! You need to come with me, Maggie Hetzker, now!
We stared at each other. This was too weird. 30 seconds ago, I was half asleep in Fort Comfy, and now here I was being ordered by a perfect stranger to attend some sort of meeting in the middle of the night. The secret agent corner of my brain kicked slowly into gear, analyzing the situation.
Based on the available evidence, this might be some type of adventure. Well, we should go then, I said, deciding to roll with it. I'll just get Abby.
Carolina shook her head.
Only the leader of your network is invited to the meeting.
The what?
The leader of our network? If she meant our linked-up forts, then that meant me. But Abby definitely wouldn't want to miss this.
Except, said a quiet little voice inside me, you missed out on camp. Why shouldn't Abby stay behind this time? She got her solo adventure. Why not you? Isn't it your turn to come back with stories to tell?
That's me, I said, swallowing hard. I'm the leader.
My stomach swooped. My first solo adventure! But my heart gave a twinge.
Abby hadn't left me behind on purpose. She'd had no choice.
This wasn't quite the same.
Then again, it didn't sound like I really had a choice either, right?
We know you are, said Carolina. This way!
She reached out and seized a blue plaid wall pillow. It was one of the ones Abby had pulled down the day before, so I knew for a fact it led nowhere. I was just about to tell her so when Carolina yanked it aside, and a shining gold cushion appeared behind it. I felt my jaw drop straight through the floor. Carolina pushed the metallic cushion out of her way and crawled into the impossible link. I followed, dragging my jaw along with me, and staggered to my feet amid clamoring voices and a dazzling golden light inside a massive, gargantuan, how am I not dreaming this, pillow fort.
Wah-heh,
I said intelligently.
Who? How?
Whoa.
It was cavernous, at least 5 times bigger than the cafeteria at school.
There was enough room to fly a helicopter.
Carolina and I were at the outer edge, standing against a wall of mismatched pillows that curved away to either side, pillow after pillow after pillow circling the entire space. A bright patchwork bedsheet and blanket dome arced above our heads, rising to at least 60 feet high in the center, where a chandelier the size of a house shone like a sun made of fireworks, filling the whole place with that shimmering golden light. I let out a breath I hadn't realized I was holding and looked down from the ceiling to the jam-packed floor beneath. And oh, that floor. It was full to overflowing, a packed maze of sofas and pillow forts of every shape and size, with little paths and roads cutting between them. My eyes pinged around, trying to see everything at once. A fluorescent teal sofa palace! A double-decker fort with a swing set! A row of mini fridges. An avenue of bookshelves. An actual ball pit! And hey, it was the middle of the night. How were there kids everywhere? Kids were chasing each other along the narrow paths, crawling in and out of the forts, pulling books off shelves, jumping on sofas, and clambering out from behind pillows. All as if this were the most normal thing in the world. And just like that, I was nervous. This was my first day of tennis lessons all over again. All these kids, talking, laughing, running, and I didn't know a single one. I didn't know my way around. I didn't know the rules. I didn't even know where I was. And they didn't know me either. No one here knew I was a master secret agent, or that I'd been running my own epic adventure games for years. No one knew I was cool.
Keep up, Maggie Hatsker, called a voice,
and I blinked back to my body. Carolina was heading off along the wall to my left. I hurried to catch up, but flashes of sound coming from behind the wall pillows kept hijacking my attention. If these pillows worked like the ones in Fort McForterson, then every one of them, stretching all the way around the room, could lead somewhere. That meant dozens and dozens of possible links. I slowed, trailing a hand across the changing fabrics, listening. The roar of a waterfall boomed from behind a pillow covered in pink sequins. Loud, opera-style singing drifted through the next. Chickens clucked around the edges of a thin green body pillow. And from an enormous cushion the size of a garage door came a steady, bright clinking like a downpour of metal raindrops. I stopped and pressed an ear to it, my spy senses tingling.
Maggie Hatsker!
Yelled Carolina, sounding exasperated. She'd stepped away from the wall and was heading down a path directly onto the main floor. I jogged to catch up. Kids looked around as I passed. Some smiled, some waved. A few laughed. There sure were a lot of them.
A girl carrying a trombone appeared from behind a bookcase, took one look at me, and broke into giggles. I flushed, my scalp prickling, and suddenly wished Abby were with me. She'd know what to do here. She'd stick by my side. She probably felt the exact same way when she got to camp all on her own. I did my best to summon my music, to walk with my head held high and the wind blowing through my hair. But it wasn't quite working. Carolina led the way to the very center of the fort, where a round table sat on a platform beneath the gargantuan chandelier. The chandelier was stunning up close, all gleaming metal and golden lights, and decorated with bunches of... wait. Kids? There were kids up there, hanging 50 feet off the ground. I had to squint, but I could just make them out, geared up in black visors and climbing harnesses, crawling over the chandelier, dusting, polishing, and cleaning. And hey, wait again. There were kids even higher up than that, dangling like window washers from the walls and ceiling, going at the curving blankets with needles and pins and thread. Whoa. Times 10. Beneath the chandelier, four long banners hung all the way down to four chairs situated around the table. Four kids, two boys and two girls, were sitting motionless in the chairs, their hands flat on the table in front of them. They all wore matching silver sunglasses. We climbed the steps and came to a halt. There was a long pause. The hubbub continued on the floor around us, but here on the platform everything was still.
"Welcome back, Carolina," said the girl sitting across from us finally. She looked a little older than me. She had silver hoops in her ears and a streak of purple in her short black ponytail. "Please introduce our guest." Apart from her lips, the girl hadn't moved a muscle.
"Yes, ma'am," said Carolina formally. "Counselors, this is Maggie Hetzker."
"Maggie Hetzker?"
She held out a hand.
"This is the council."
I looked around and shivered. There was something deeply impressive about the way these kids were sitting there motionless, serene, bathed in that golden light. They looked like the statues in the lost temple of the saber-toothed tiger, ancient and powerful. The one closest to me, a pink-cheeked boy in overalls who couldn't have been older than 9, had a clipboard and pen set neatly on the table in front of him.
"Hello, the council," I said. What was the proper way to address a group like this?
I needed more information, but I was determined to keep my cool.
"So, what are you the council of, exactly?"
"Pillow forts, Maggie Hetzker," answered the girl with the ponytail. "We are the leaders and representatives of the four regional chapters of NFAFA, the North American Founding and Allied Forts Alliance."
"Oh, my creepy frog." I felt my cool slip right off the platform. I mean, sure, I was standing inside a palatial, impossible pillow fort, but what?
"My name is Noriko," the girl continued, "head of the council and chancellor of the forts of the Eastern Seaboard."
She raised a finger toward the banner above her head. It was midnight blue and showed a silver ship sailing over a rolling sea of pillows.
"This is Ben."
Noriko nodded toward pink-cheeked overall boy.
"Emperor of the Great Plains Sofa Circle."
I looked up to see a grass-green banner with a circle of wheat around a plump yellow cushion.
"Next to him is Misha, Queen of the United Southern Gulf Pacific Fortresses."
Misha had deep brown skin and a pair of fancy tortoiseshell frames poking out from under her silver sunglasses. Her banner was made up of three vertical stripes, blue, green, blue, with a castle of orange pillows rising in the center.
"And last is Murray, captain of the Northern and Arctic Alliance."
Pale, sandy-haired Murray had a banner showing a polar bear on a mound of white pillows under a pink and purple sky. I nodded, taking it all in, thankful for my years of spy training as I burned their names and titles into my brain. I was deep in unknown territory here. I needed every scrap of intel I could get. "I'm Maggie," I said, realizing they were all waiting for me. "Vice Director of Camp Pillow Fort." Our name didn't sound cool at all anymore. I had a sudden horrifying thought and looked down.
Ugh. I was in my sleepy dinosaur pajamas. That probably explained why all those kids grinned and laughed as I went by. We, don't have a banner yet, I finished awkwardly.
Vice director, said Ben. He had a sharp, high voice. The Alliance rules specifically state that only the very highest-ranking member of a group is permitted to solicit the council under these circumstances.
My eyebrows bounced to the top of my forehead. What 9-year-old threw that kind of vocabulary around and pronounced their consonants so precisely?
That's true, said Carolina, stepping forward. And I did my best, but I wasn't able to convince the director of Camp Pillowfort to come along.
Why not?
Because he's a cat.
It was like someone flipped a switch. The atmosphere of the regal mystery swirling around the group shattered as Misha shouted,
"Heh!"
and slapped the table. Murray squealed, "Aww!" and put his hands to his cheeks. And Noriko began giggling, then laughing so hard she was practically crying. Ben was the last to let his statue pose drop, but he wasn't smiling.
"You broke," he said angrily. "You were all supposed to stay in character. We were doing so well."
"I'm sorry," said Murray, his palms still pressed to his face in delight.
"But their leader's a kitty. A kitty!"
"Hey, we tried," said Misha, stretching her shoulders and beaming.
"Good effort, drama committee. But now it's snack committee time."
She ducked under the table and reappeared with a giant plastic tub of popcorn and a jumbo carton of goldfish crackers. Noriko was still half-giggling.
"Sorry. Sorry," she said, waving a hand at Ben. "I was just picturing Carolina sitting down and carefully explaining to this cat exactly why the Alliance rules require him to come to our meeting. And the cat looking up at her, like..."
And she was back to rocking with laughter. Carolina shrugged in a, "Yeah, pretty much," gesture.
"Hey, this is serious," said Ben.
He jabbed a finger at his clipboard.
"These rules are in place for a reason. I bet I could have got this director to come to the meeting."
"No, you couldn't," said Misha around a mouthful of popcorn.
"Because having a cat in here would mean I'd be sneezing for the next 3 days."
She turned to me. "You have to admit it's a weird choice, Maggie Hetzger. Do you have any other pets in Camp Pillowfort?"
"Well, no, I don't. I mean, Samson's not mine," I stammered.
I was completely thrown off by their abrupt change in tone. "So what, that first part was all an act? An act to impress or scare newcomers? What sort of game were these council kids playing?"
"Just because someone's got allergies," said Ben grumpily.
"He's just jealous because the rest of us have pets and he doesn't," Misha informed me. "Do you want me to bring Sprinkles in again, Ben? Would that make you feel better?"
"All right, you two," said Noriko, pulling herself together. "We do have an actual meeting to get through here."
"Remember how fluffy he is?"
Misha continued.
"So fluffy," said Murray. "The fluffiest there ever was."
"That's right," said Misha, throwing him a goldfish cracker. She looked around. "Hey, why am I the only member of the snack committee doing my job tonight?" Ben groaned dramatically.
"Because I did all the work on the drama committee, remember?"
"You are the drama committee,"
muttered Noriko. Murray giggled. Ben glowered at them, but he ducked under the table like Misha, returning with a tub of red licorice and a bag of marshmallows.
"None of you deserve this,"
he grumbled, pulling the lid off the licorice. Carolina nudged me as the others dove at the candy.
"Sprinkles is Misha's new puppy," she whispered. "She brought him in to visit last week, and Ben sort of fell in love. It's been pretty funny."
"And it's not even fair," Ben was saying as I tuned back in. "I can run the entire Great Plains sofa circle with an iron fist, but my mom thinks I'm not mature enough to have a simple pet."
"Well, everything you just said proves she's right," said Misha reasonably, waving a piece of licorice at him.
Pets aren't simple, and you shouldn't need an iron fist to run your network.
Noriko raised her hand.
Hello? Seriously, we still have work to do.
I run my network with a Ouija board.